is not as simple as saying, yep, we have a mentally healthy workplace and this is what we want to do.
We've got a huge opportunity, I think, in real estate to have a huge impact.
Hello and welcome to the first in a series of very special podcasts from us here at EG about mental health and mental wellness in a business setting and in the built environment. I'm your host today, Sam McClary, and I'm joined by Zoe Sinclair, founder of Employee Matters and This Can Happen. Hello, Zoe.
Good morning. Hello.
Henrietta Freyter, who's HSE and Wellbeing Manager at the Crown Estate. Hey, Henrietta.
Hello, good morning.
And mental health care, Sylvia Bruce. Sylvia, hello, welcome.
Good morning and welcome to everyone.
Excellent. So we are here today, as I've just said, to talk about mental health and mental wellness. And I suppose there's a part of me that really wants to talk about mental strength as well. So I guess let's get straight into it. While I was researching for this podcast, I of course looked at some of the stats out there, and they're quite surprising, aren't they? So one in four of us in the UK will experience a mental health problem each year, so that's one of us in this room, and one in six of us will experience a common mental health problem in any given week. So with those sort of figures around, I wonder, you know, why is it important that we're talking about mental health, mental wellness, mental resilience, and why is it that it seems that we're talking about it a whole lot more now? Zoe, I'm going to start with you.
Okay, yes. Well, in fact, even to add to your research, I would say that I'm a director of a workplace mental health conference, and we had our inaugural conference last year, and we produced a piece of research with one of our partners, Accenture. And we try to even bust the myth of one in four, well, not necessarily a myth, but the one in four stat. And our research showed that it's not one in four, it's everyone. Mm-hmm. In that everyone, to a degree, in every one part of their life, at some point will suffer from mental ill health. And I think actually that really sums it up. And I think the reason why we're talking about it so much more now is we've got to the place that health is about our physical health and our mental health. And I think in the past, when we talk about health, it's just so much easier to recognise physical health. And we haven't spoken about mental health at all because of the taboo, because of the stigma attached to it. And that is why I think we're just talking about it so much more now.
And Sylvia, do you think this is something that I always struggle with? And maybe it's because I'm simple, but physical illness, easy to see, easy to talk about. But, you know, physical illness can range from I've got a bit of a sniffles and I feel a bit tired, to, you know, all sorts of my leg is broken, my head has fallen off. With mental illness, That range, I suppose, is still very, very, very wide. But why are we so afraid of that? And I suppose I'm coming from the point of, if I've got a cold, I might still come to work. If I've got a mild mental illness, would I still come to work? Should I still come to work? How do I deal with that?
Goodness, that's a lot of questions.
Sorry.
That's all right. First of all, I would slightly challenge the idea that physical health is visible. It's very few, unless one has a white stick or is in a wheelchair or has an ear implant. There's many physical illnesses that are invisible too. So I think that's one thing that has to be broken down. On the mental ill health side, yes, it's not visible. Should we come to work or not? In my own personal experiences, I did many years ago because I held very strong personal and professional boundaries. And also my health, albeit whether it was my physical health or my mental health, was a very private matter. So I kept very personal and professional boundaries. And also for me at that time, work was my saviour and my antidote and my therapy, my escape. Whether there are signs or not, yes, there are signs. This is one of the things that I work on a lot from my own experiences and one of the things that we do, that there are signs of mental ill health. But I think they're more and more and more, to Zoe's point, that now mental health does affect us all. We all have mental health. We all have physical health. And that's one thing I think needs to be addressed, is that we all have mental health. Mm. So give that being a given, there are signs when we start to struggle, like we do when we have physical health, as I did. Although at the time, I didn't want to recognise the signs. I didn't actually know what the signs were. But there are signs, and I think there's more and more and more, there's an education piece, an understanding piece around spotting our own signs of deterioration as we do physical health. We spot, as you say, when we have a cold, we've got a niggle. If we spot, as I did, I was feeling wired, feeling X, feeling Y, there were certain behavioural indicators that I didn't recognise, and if other people were more alert to them, perhaps they would have said something too. So I think my short answer would be, let's look at our mental health as we do our physical health, which is what Zoe. Let's understand we all have mental health and we all have physical health. And let's start to spot our signs and our mental health as it starts to deteriorate as we do our physical health.
Thank you. And Henrietta, you're working in a wellbeing role within a reasonably large, let's call it, a landed estate for the Crown estate. Can you talk to us a little bit about the work you're doing there? Are you looking at the staff that the Crown has and making sure that the environment is great for them? Are you looking wider as well at the products that you are creating for the general public?
Effectively, we see our reach as quite significant. Our vision at the Crown Estate from a health, safety and wellbeing perspective is that every individual and organisation is strengthened through connecting with the Crown Estate. So we definitely consider how we can best support our own employees. We think a lot about our supply chain, because we have a huge supply chain, we're quite outsourced. So that's a significant number of people that we can have an impact on. And then we also think about our customers and community. So our whole kind of value chain, if you like, from the way that we interact with people to actually the places that we design and how they're kind of built and operated. So we see that the reach is quite significant.
Excellent, thank you. And Zoe, coming back to you around workplace and mental health and the events that you're holding to sort of bring about that awareness, can you talk us through, I suppose, the journey that the industry is on, business is on, and then we'll bring that back a bit towards real estate in a little bit, but the journey of UK business or global business?
I think the word journey is definitely the right one. And I think there are workplaces that are just beginning their journey, some that are wondering how to begin their journey, and those that are very far advanced. And I think that is very indicative, I think, of the whole mental well-being piece, that there's trepidation, but there's also excitement, and all of that together makes it, you know, an interesting mix, I'd say. So we have very much found that you know, one of the burning questions tend to be that a company, for example, might do a wonderful event and they want to launch something and they do a wonderful event and they are really, really surprised at how many people attend the event. This is just an example, quite a sort of stereotypical example. And they have a room full with a great speaker who, for the first time, the company are addressing, you know, a personal story, perhaps, of mental well-being. And then the next question is, wow, we got this buy-in and this event, but what do we do next? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the million-dollar question. And it's about the whole concept of perhaps changing the culture of the workplace, which is a huge project that doesn't happen overnight. And it's also about, you know, how to embed a mental health strategy within your workplace. For some companies, the question may be how to get senior leadership buy-in. Sometimes, you know, some companies aren't even able to do that first event because senior leadership are wary. A lot of work that we have seen has been individuals who maybe are at a lower end of the company, maybe even a graduate just starting, who perhaps really wants to make their mark, has suffered ill mental health and wants to make an impact on the workforce. How do they, as one individual, you know, start moving that conversation up through the ranks? the whole mental well-being, or as you said, and I'd love to talk about that afterwards, the mental strength. I think that's extremely positive, great slant on this. Is a very, very big topic, and it is growing and growing. It is not as simple as saying, yep, we have a mentally healthy workplace and this is what we want to do. It's, I think, by hopefully the some of those things that I've just said, it shows that it's a very, very big piece, and companies need to work on it. So the fact that so many people, so many companies are talking more and more about it and hopefully sharing with each other, which is the purpose of the conference, for lots of different companies to be able to come together and share both the successes of what they're doing, but also the challenges. This is not an easy topic to address. And I think we have to face up to that. It's not like, all right, come on, let's put a mental health strategy in place. This is all going to be very easy. It's not. And how do you measure the success of what you're doing? That's kind of the next stage after you've put something in place. So there's lots and lots that workplaces are thinking about. So, yeah, it's a very big area.
Excellent. So how do we go from those, the talking about it and saying we need to do something, to actually doing something? What are some of the practical things that people can do, that businesses can do? Sylvia, any tips from you?
Well, when I was quite a few leading international banks, you know, when I was the last one I was saying to you earlier, I was the mental health committee chair. And as Zoe just said, you know, it's all very well having a strategy in place and let's hold an event, but it's what do we do after? And my own belief is that it's turning that awareness. Awareness is great and everyone's talking, which is fantastic, which is a great road to be on, a journey to be on. As an aside, the Time to Change pledge started in 2007, 2008. So I've been doing this stuff since then. And it's interesting, as Zoe pointed out, there's a lot of people now that aren't just started on this continuum. But a lot of banks, and you know, when I was at a leading international bank, we did exactly that, moving along the continuum from shifting awareness and understanding to actions. And we did that by a variety of ways. And what I did, and a lot extracurricular to my day job, but a lot of it is through employee resource groups, employee committees. As Zoe said, a lot of it might start from one person just setting one up. Yes, it, you know, it's lots of hurdles to overcome. But we did mastermind lots of different events. And to Zoe's point, one of the main things is to get senior leader buy-in, to get them to come along to events, because even those people, what we're doing, the marzipan layer or the permafrost layer, those that are really resistant to what that mental health means, that matters, because now a lot of organisations are recognising that mental health is a workplace asset, which taps into your point about mental health strength. It affects performance, it affects productivity, it affects the bottom line. So if you've got someone who's a bit resistant to this, you know, this mental health stuff, if they see a senior leader going in to talk to an event, they want to be seen by that senior leader. And you might just get them start to change their view. But we do lots of different events. Talking, people giving the hints and tips. We used to have an audience with. Used to get a senior leader come in and used to talk about how do you keep cool, calm and collected in these certain environments. Giving people hints, tips and techniques so they can take back into the workplace. So it's not just going to a talk or an event or a workshop. Taking them back. Another thing is a lot of education, as I said, around helping people spot the signs. When you're stressed, how do you experience it? What are you feeling? How do you know? How do you know when you're happy? How do you know when you're sad? A lot of stuff, giving people the techniques to understand what's going on. Rolling out, we used to have drop-in sessions. We used to hold drop-in sessions upstairs on one of the floors. People used to drop in, speak, have tea and coffee, based on the mental health foundations, you know, tea and talk things. There's so many different activities. And of course, you have the four really ones in the year of Time to Talk, Mental Health Awareness Week, Stress Awareness, World Suicide Prevention Day, and World Mental Health Day. You can have events centred around those to keep up the continuum. So it's not just a one-off. It keeps it in the mind's eye. It keeps it in our mind and our brains and our thoughts. It's not just a one-off. So there's lots of different activities that can be done.
Sure.
But it does surprise me, because I've been doing this for such a long time now, how so many... I've only just started, but they can learn so much and share the best practice. So what did you do to raise the awareness? What did you do to raise that? And so things like the conferences and talks like this, we can share and what was good and what didn't work so well and what does work well.
it all makes sense listening to it, that, you know, we should be doing this sort of stuff, but how do you fit that into a working day? You know, businesses still have a business to run. So Henrietta, I'd be really keen to hear from you. You know, Crown has a massive estate, you've got lots of tenants, you've got all sorts of things that are going on every day, keeping people busy. How do we find time or make time to have these conversations when, you know, pressures are high, and you know, we're going into a time in the economy when pressures are going to get even higher and harder. So how does that affect your day job, I suppose?
I think the way that we've focused on it is that actually when it comes to mental health, leadership is really key, and actually having enough leadership buy-in so that they really see it as a bottom line issue. Fundamentally, we've talked about the fact that everybody has mental health, and I genuinely believe it affects everybody at some point in time. So nobody's immune to it. And actually, we see it on the as the spectrum of mental health. So sometimes it might be having a conversation about how people are struggling, but actually it's also about how we can support people to thrive. And when you have conversations with senior leaders about, it isn't just about supporting our people, which we should absolutely be doing because it's the right thing to do and it's a good business decision, but also how can we support people to even be further on the spectrum and really thrive and really excel. There's been lots of research that's demonstrated that if people are stressed, their communication skills start to be impacted by that. So fundamentally, if you've got people within an organisation that aren't thinking as well as they could be, aren't innovating, they're not as creative as they could be because they are under stress, because their mental health is affected, it affects everything to do with that organisation. Everything that we do is affected by how we think and how we feel. How motivated we are, how valued and connected we feel to an organisation is definitely demonstrated to have an impact on the success of that organisation, because it's all about all of our collective output. So once you get that leadership buy-in at a senior level, they want to give it time and they want to prioritise it, and they want to make sure that people in the organisation are empowered to talk about it. And that's the journey that we've really been on. We look at mental health, we've looked at the Stevenson Pharma report and kind of produced our approach and strategy to mental health based around some of those key principles. But fundamentally, we've focused on how we can raise awareness and reduce stigma around mental health. I'm hoping in a few years to come, we won't be talking about having to raise awareness and reduce stigma. We also think about how we can provide an effective framework for support. So we have trained lots of mental health first aiders across the Crown and State. We've got at least 1 in 10 one mental health first aider for every 10 employees. We also have an amazing employee assistance program. We do lots of different promotions. We've mentioned things like tea and talks. We've put up different kind of mirror vinyls with It's Okay To, really trying to empower people to have the conversation. And just as we've been discussing earlier, when you actually start to talk about it and you give people the time and the space to actually engage with the topic and talk about it, it's amazing the response you get. So at the Crown Estate and also our supply chain, when you start to engage with people, the response is really quite powerful. And that also reinforces the message that senior leadership have been given around why it's just so critical that we talk about it. We talked about stats earlier. Within our supply chain, obviously we're a developer, we've got lots of construction projects, and actually when it comes to construction, it's a really significant thing that we should be talking about. 2 people every day complete suicide in the construction industry in the UK, which is an absolutely terrifying thing to think about. So if we're not having the conversation about mental health, then we're really missing something that's a critical business issue as far as we're concerned.
Thank you. Sylvia?
Can I just add as well there, you talk about how do you do it along your day job. I think for me, to Zoe's point about, you know, what organisations do, I think also it does depend on the commitment of the organisation as to whether they have, for example, a standalone group that drives mental health forward, or whether they wrap it around, as a lot of organisations do, in employee networks. The latter, then you are relying on the goodwill and the well-being and the passion of the individual employees to do that, in effect, on the end of their desk alongside their day job, which in itself, paradoxically, can cause additional amount of stress and pressure, because they're trying to do something they're passionate about and do the day job at the same time, which is the situation I was in at the organisation I was at. Other organisations will take the view it is so important, will have a designated team for mental health. So I think a lot of that is driven by, to your point, to the other two speakers' point about the senior leader, how much importance should they place on it. And my own personal view is, if they are that if it's that important, then have a separate team. That's my personal view, because if it's that important than have a separate team rather than requiring people to base on their own passion, do alongside their day job.
Sure. I want to play cynical journalist here and pick up on language, actually, because I think, you know, when we talk about mental health and mental illness, your put this on anyone else, but my brain immediately goes to weakness. Whereas if you talk about thriving, as you did, Henrietta, and we talk about mental resilience, mm-hmm. I just wonder if businesses would almost buy into that more, because it's about creating a place where employees can thrive. It's not creating a place where you can potentially create a environment where people say, you know, if they're just feeling a little bit overworked, which we all feel from time to time, oh, you know, I can take that off. I'm suffering from stress, when work is work, isn't it? Work isn't a holiday, as much as we'd like it to be. So what's the importance of language in this journey, Zoe?
I think it's hugely important. Mm. However, I would say that whilst all the positives, thriving in the workplace, you know, mental resilience, strength is absolutely the way to go. I think we're sort of missing a point that we're trying to shy away from mental ill health, and that sometimes can be an excuse for companies to not use that terminology, which is exactly the type of taboo we're trying to get over. So, you know, there's many, many times have we spoken to companies that say we want to do something on stress, we want to do something on mental well-being, but we don't want to use the word stress and we don't want to use the word mental, and that's exactly what we're trying to, you know, those are the messages we're trying to get across in the workplace. So I do understand that companies potentially might start their journey looking at the positives, but I really feel that it's a negative to not look at the potentially negative language, because it's shying away from the real problem. I also just want to mention, which is sort of about language as well, something that we've been talking about senior leadership. Whilst I absolutely, and I think I even myself said this, that senior leadership buy-in is hugely important, I think there's something to think about in terms of some of the people that the potential people that we're really trying to reach and not quite getting to are potentially the middle management. Mm-hmm. And it's, in my opinion, it is easier for senior leaders to talk about their own mental health journey, if that's the case, because they've reached a certain point in their careers. They've made it already.
And they're secure.
And they don't need to worry about any consequences. Yeah. In my opinion, it is much harder for middle management and below to, even if they have seen a senior leader and the culture is changing, for them they will still be thinking, yes, but you're at the top now and I've not got there, and that's where I want to be. And surely if I tell my story. So it's, yes, it is about senior leaders telling their story, but it's also about the messaging, which is again about the language, to cascade down to the organization, to everyone in the organization, so that it's a safe place in their work environment. And I think that's what it's all about. You know, you can have a million and one senior leaders talking about it, but if people don't feel safe in their work environment to talk themselves, then nothing has been accomplished.
We hear this with everything, don't we? And there's, you know, there's three big themes, particularly here at EG, that we are talking about with the built environment. One, obviously, being mental health, mental wellness. The other being sustainability. And the third being diversity and inclusion. And all of those things, it's so important to have the senior management on board. But the sticking point is always that middle management, because they do feel like that is the, you know, the sweet spot, isn't it, where you're either going to jump up or be pushed down. So Henrietta, at the Crown, how important is giving those middle managers a voice in that safe space?
Although we have a huge reach, we are a relatively small organisation and we really benefit from that. So we've got about 250 people within our central London head office, and about 180 over at Windsor. So that enables us to have lots of kind of one-to-one conversations. So I imagine for a much larger organisation, it's probably is more challenging to have more conversations and to have as much kind of direct conversations as we do at the Crown Estate. But we really benefit from that with a sort of organisation in terms of our culture that's very open. You can go and talk to anybody where we work. And because of that, I think we really benefit from the impact of just the fact that we're such an open organisation anyway. We do have lots of different leadership programmes and management programmes, and we've tried to incorporate and weave in some of our messaging around mental health into those programmes so that we're kind of empowering and encouraging people to have the conversation and to hear back how they feel and the impact and what they're experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And that's been quite interesting. We have different measures of, we talked about measuring success earlier, different ways of actually understanding what's going on, and we can break that down in terms of different levels of management. So we have our employee survey, for example, on an annual basis, and that's shown some great results when it comes to wellbeing and mental health in terms of what people are experiencing and the impact that the programmes that we're running are having. And we also do Britain's Healthiest Workplace as well, which gives us some great data. So we're just about to receive our report on that for this year.
And a great bit of competition, and who doesn't love that?
Exactly.
I want to bring it back to real estate specifically. It's hard to say when you've only had two coffees. And, you know, sort of why mental health awareness is important in this sector from a employee perspective, and also from a built environment perspective. You know, these are the people who are creating the places and spaces for us to live, work and play. So how vital is it that real estate really gets this, Zoe?
I think that only one piece of the mental health piece is about conversations and between people and training and everything. And in this day and age, the other piece is all about the buildings and the infrastructure and what everything looks like. Because the I'll give you an example from a wellbeing survey. As you just said, a company got a feedback that they hadn't even thought about before, that some places where people were working were a bit dark and dingy, that there were no windows, that there was no light coming in. Well, you know, people hadn't thought about those things, but now we're in an age where environment is playing such a huge role in the way that we work and play, that's just such a important factor for EG and for real estate, and I think we cannot deny the importance of that in the whole mental health thing. It's everything together. And so for the builders, for the architects, for the everyone in real estate, I think this is a really exciting time, actually, to look at innovation in the way that we build and create spaces for people to work in.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And Sylvia, how do you, from an individual perspective, if you are working for a company that cares about this stuff, that is creating places that make people feel happier, healthier, you know, they have access to light and air and all that sort of all the stuff that we need to survive as human beings, do you think that has an impact on the emotional state of a person that they know they're working for a company that cares about those things?
I do, yes. Just on a basic visceral level, how do we feel when the sun is shining and we can see the sun? I worked on a floor when I was in Canary Wharf. It was on a floor, about 600 people. There was no windows, just along one north side. And to actually see what was going on outside, you literally had to press your cheek against the glass to look up to see what was going on. It's sad, interesting and fascinating how people do acclimatise to that. The environment was still productive and still performed, but the question mark is how much more performance and how much more productivity can anyone have if they're feeling happy. Now, happy is an individual experience, but I remember donkeys years ago, it's a long time ago when I started work now, my old boss, his view, and I've written a lot on it, is a happy crew is a productive crew. And if you can enable your team to be happy in whatever that means for them, environments are a great affector, indicator make an impact in such a great way. And to Zoe's point, if you're in an environment like I was, where it's grey, it's a bit like a battleship. The floors are grey, the walls are grey, the seats are grey, the you know, everywhere was grey, you know, and you're breathing in these sort of brightly coloured, you know, wall paintings, which are great. And even if as a real estate, that's the way it is and that's the way your client wants it to be, outside you can still create in those environments, you know, outside on the pavement or anywhere, you know, trees and shrubs and stuff like that. So people, if the workplace is a bit rigid, you know, a bit structured, you know, you have some parameters around that, you can still create environments outside so that people can step outside and enjoy that too, because that's a huge benefit too. So like Zoe, I think this is a very exciting time because they could also be quite smart and clever and tap into the, you know, Extinction Rebellion thing and the climate change and have more trees and plants and stuff like that around, because it makes such a difference. The smallest thing, go outside, see sun on your back, a few trees, even if it's a cold day, doesn't matter, it's air. Going out, coming back in, a good environment, it does make a difference.
Yeah, Henrietta, are you excited?
I am very excited. We've just got a huge opportunity, I think, in real estate to have a huge impact. I think the environment's so critical. We're ridiculously lucky where we work, because One St James's Market, our head office, achieved World Platinum, which is an internationally recognised standard for wellbeing, and that's the highest you can get. So it's just such a beautiful space. And if you haven't come and visited me, do come and see me, because it's just gorgeous.
It's an open invite then, we'll be over.
It's just such a beautiful space, and it does have an impact on how people feel, definitely. We've got the results to show that.
Do you use that building for you as a learning tool to think about, well, you know, what do we do going through the rest of our portfolio?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an ambition around WELL certification, how we can weave that into our other developments. And also we think about how we develop in terms of how we can really have a positive impact on mental health. So one of our big focuses is around connection. How many opportunities can we take to create spaces where we're going to enhance or encourage people to connect? Mm. Having a sense of fostering community, and really placemaking is so critical, because if people feel connected to other people where they are, it really boosts mental health. Things like air quality is shown to have a big impact on how you think, actually, and people are more productive. If the air quality is enhanced in space, the impact of noise can be a real stressor to people. And actually, sometimes when we're building, I think sometimes we think about building for us or carbon copies of us, and we don't think about the whole spectrum of people in this community, and that's so critical. So from we touched earlier on diversity and inclusion, actually, if you've got a whole community that wants to enjoy a space and coming together, they were more likely to thrive together in that space. You need to think about you know, pregnant women, you need to think about maybe people that with early stages of dementia that maybe are struggling to find their way or navigate their way around a space. And doesn't just mean because you're you know, used to being in a commercial building that you can't actually be suffering a bad day and be a little bit distracted and then have the impact of not being in a nice space, the impact that has on how you perform at work. So I think it's critical that we take the full opportunity that we can to design really with people in mind and with people-centric design.
I like that a lot. So there are so many avenues that we could go down here, but this is just the first of many podcasts and pieces of content that we're going to be doing at EG, working together on that. So not to give them all away in one podcast, I guess I'd like to round us up with one piece of practical advice that our listeners can take away, take back to their businesses, that they can be doing to either start on the journey or take that next step on the journey to making people more mentally health aware and making that tiny little change that might then grow into something bigger. Zoe.
Whoa, that's actually a really hard question. Yeah no, I
that's what we do as journalists.
No, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. No. I'm not saying I can't answer it. No, not at all. I think my nugget would be that there is a lot of noise out there at the moment on mental well-being in the workplace, and it is absolutely fine and the right thing to do to take one small step at a time. Do not try and do everything. Do not feel or think that you can achieve everything overnight, because I think that it's a cultural shift that will take time if this hasn't been spoken about before. So to sum up, one step at a time, and don't think you will be able to solve every single issue of mental well-being in your workplace straight away. It's a journey.
Excellent. Thank you. Have patience.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Sylvia?
I'd like to pick up on your point about language. And what I've been encouraged today is a lot of people will talk about mental health. In my own experience, they immediately, subconsciously, unconsciously, jump to illness, depression, bipolar. I did a talk recently about mental health, and I was castigated at the end by one person because I didn't talk about depression and anxiety. And I said, my point is we're talking about mental health. And I think one of my nuggets would be for people to understand the difference between what mental health is and what mental ill health is. So we understand the difference, because I think by understanding that, we can then start to understand the difference that the two make. Understand that I think it would also encourage conversations, and I think it would also help to destigmatise the fear around mental ill health if we understood about what mental health is. So I think that's one of the things to differentiate. Mental health is one thing, mental health is another. It's not to dilute what mental ill health is, but understand the difference, as we do with physical health and ill health.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you. Henrietta?
I think for me, it's about having a spirit of inquiry and really starting to see people through conversations with employees, with other organisations, because if we demonstrate care for the people, even just asking, are you okay, and not being afraid to shy away from those conversations and have honest conversations, we can really have an impact and start a ripple effect, because just through one conversation, you can have a big impact on somebody else.
Fantastic. I like that. I would summarise that as talk, listen, and be patient. You know, let's work on this together, and we will get there in the end. Thank you so much for joining us in the EG podcast studio with its grey floor and grey walls.
We do have a bit of colour,
but there is colour. Yes, so we're trying, and hopefully a little bit of laughter as well. But thank you so much for joining us, Zoe, Sylvia, and Henrietta.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.